The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Christine, thanks for the Easter basket you sent me. It has all my favorite candies and a stuffed bunny rabbit.
Surprise the little ones in your life with personalized plush Easter baskets from Personal Creations. Each plush animal Easter basket comes filled with free candy and a free stuffed bunny, all for $19.99. Plus, you can have it personalized with any name for free. To get this special Easter deal, go to personalcreations.com. Click the orange star in the upper right corner and enter the secret code 0200. That's personalcreations.com, secret code 0200.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. A former key advisor to the president with a story to tell.
How the White House is responding.
And millions desperate for food in East Africa.
Airdrops are the only way to get some kind of nutrition to this community.
Plus, what's at stake for your privacy online?
You can't completely hide your tracks.
Later, finding peace in politics.
Just breathe in and out and notice the sensation of the breath.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's get started this week with the White House and go to correspondent Stephen Portnoy, who's there. Great to have you back, Stephen.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Stephen, what's going on with former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn? He's offered to testify to lawmakers investigating the Trump campaign's ties to Russia in exchange for immunity. What could we learn from him, and what has the administration's response been?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? Flynn's attorney said in a letter on Thursday night that his client has a story to tell, and under the right circumstances, he'll tell it. But the lawyer says in his letter that no reasonable person would submit to questioning in what he calls a highly politicized witch hunt environment without assurances against unfair prosecution. In other words, he wants immunity.
Stephen, what's the response been from President Trump?
Well, the White House spokesman on Friday said that the White House welcomes Flynn's testimony. Sean Spicer said Flynn should go up there and testify. President Trump tweeted that Mike Flynn should ask for immunity. He says this is a witch hunt, an excuse for a big election loss by the media and Dems of historic proportion. The White House is saying it is not in any way concerned about anything that Mike Flynn might say under oath.
But there's three investigations going on into this, right?
The House Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and off Capitol Hill, the FBI is probing any possible connections between any member of the Trump transition team or the campaign and Russia. And Michael Flynn, we now know, had conversations with the Russian ambassador over the course of the transition that he wound up misleading the vice president about, leading to his departure from this White House. So the FBI certainly would love to talk to Michael Flynn, but I'll tell you, this whole notion of congressional testimony and congressional immunity could implicate that.
Okay, Stephen, how could it do that?
Well, here's something important to remember. Congress can grant immunity to any witness it wants by a two-thirds vote of any congressional committee if the witness decides that he doesn't want to testify because he would basically plead the fifth, invoke his constitutional right not to incriminate himself. If the two-thirds vote of the committee goes through, the Congress could compel that testimony, and the Justice Department, federal prosecutors, cannot use any of that testimony against that witness or pretty much any other witness. And this happened in the 1980s. Congress granted immunity to Oliver North and John Poindexter, two of the key figures in the Iran-Contra affair. Both of their convictions for lying to Congress wound up being overturned because the appeals court said that the testimony that they gave to Congress was immunized, and it tainted the statements of other witnesses who wound up testifying at their perjury trials. So the bottom line is, if Congress were to grant immunity to Michael Flynn, which I think is frankly unlikely.
All right, let's shift to Neil Gorsuch. Next week, we've got two votes in the Senate, one by the Judiciary Committee, and then what could be a full Senate vote expected Friday on his nomination. What kind of battle is brewing over President Trump's Supreme Court pick?
The key number to watch is eight. Eight Democrats. That's how many would need to come around to avoid a possible Democratic Senate filibuster. We'll know that by the end of next week. But the early part of next week, on Monday, the Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to clear Judge Gorsuch's nomination to the Senate floor. What we'll be interested to watch is whether any committee Democrats wind up voting for him in committee. But by the end of the week, the key number is eight. Will eight Democrats stand with the Republicans and say that they'll vote for this nominee. So far, by one count, I saw 34 Senate Democrats said they intend to vote no. If that number reaches 40, well, then that could block the nomination or at least temporarily suspend it. And then the big question will be, what do Republicans do next? Do they take President Trump's advice and go nuclear?
What is nuclear?
The nuclear option would eliminate the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. In 2013, under Democratic control, the Senate got rid of filibusters for everyone pretty much underneath the Supreme Court. So circuit court judges, district court judges, and anyone who serves in the executive branch can be confirmed with only a 51-vote margin. Republicans have 52 votes now. And the last bastion of the filibuster with respect to confirmations is the Supreme Court. Will it stay that way? Next week might decide that.
And the disadvantage for Republicans to use that nuclear option is what then?
Well, obviously, the concern would be that one day Republicans no longer hold the majority and Republicans no longer hold the White House. And so you'll have senators who are part of the old guard, people like Orrin Hatch, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, who might not be so interested in doing away with that longstanding precedent.
All right. Also next week, Stephen, we've got this meeting between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping at Mar-a-Lago. What are we expecting from that?
The president said on Friday it's going to be a difficult meeting. There are lots of issues to discuss, namely trade and the trade deficit between the U.S. and China. At the end of the past week, the president has taken some steps to address the trade deficit that the country faces with all of its trading partners, not singling out China in particular. But this will be something that we'll watch very closely. The meeting is taking place at Mar-a-Lago, what the president likes to call the Southern White House. This is an opportunity for President Trump to sit with President Xi and discuss these big issues at a place where President Trump is very comfortable.
And this is important for him. I mean, he's been talking about China and getting tougher with China since the beginning of the campaign, really.
Well, I mean, you could make a great montage of all the times that Donald Trump invoked China at his campaign rallies. Now is a moment where the president will sit down with his counterpart from that major world force, the world's most populous country, to discuss so many of the issues. Trade, I wonder if human rights will come up. It certainly has in the past.
Correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House, I appreciate your wisdom as always.
You bet, Steve.
A CBS News poll shows President Trump's approval rating at 40%, but it also shows Republicans don't blame him for the failure in Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare, according to CBS News Elections Director Anthony Salvanto.
More Republicans say the bill didn't pass because it was unpopular, not because of the president's approach. But we see sharp partisan divides throughout the poll, especially over possible Russian interference in the 2016 election. Half of Americans suspect Russia did try to interfere. Most Democrats think so, but most Republicans disagree. Most Democrats feel it's likely Trump's associates had improper contact with the Russian government. Three-quarters of Republicans say no, that's not likely. And most Republicans do say it's likely Donald Trump's offices were wiretapped during the campaign. Most Democrats don't think so.
CBS News Elections Director Anthony Salvanto. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup.
Signed, sealed, and delivered.
Britain's divorce letter to the EU. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. North Carolina's so-called bathroom bill has been repealed amid pressure from LGBTQ rights groups, courts, and businesses. Correspondent Mark Strassman filed this report Thursday.
Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no.
Nothing about today's vote to overturn North Carolina's bathroom law eased the hard feelings on either side. Conservative Republican Senator Dan Bishop.
This bill is at best a punt. At worst, it is a betrayal of principle.
Joaquin Carcano, a transgender male, also felt betrayed.
The Democratic lawmakers, you know, they promised to have our backs, to help protect us, and that was just, you know, empty promises.
For the last year, North Carolina law mandated that people use public bathrooms that match the gender on their birth certificates. Civil rights and LGBTQ groups were outraged. Newly elected Democratic Governor Roy Cooper promised a clean repeal. But under the new law, state lawmakers can still regulate public bathrooms, and it prohibits local municipalities from passing non-discrimination ordinances through 2020.
May for the win!
What pressured state lawmakers to act was the state's love affair with basketball. The NCAA set a deadline of today to overturn the law or lose the chance to host NCAA championship events through 2022.
You resent that basketball seemed to be the priority.
Oh, definitely. That is what is forcing people to make a decision over our lives.
What's now critical but still unclear is whether companies that have boycotted the state over the last year believe this new law goes far enough. The NCAA said that they hope to make a decision, what they believe, sometime next week.
Mark Strassman reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina. Britain's taken its first step to depart the European Union, officially giving notice to the EU in Brussels that Brexit is now underway. More from correspondent Vicky Barker in London.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. Prime Minister Theresa May's divorce letter to the EU, telling fractious British lawmakers,
"On today of all days, we should be coming together as a united kingdom."
Mixed feelings elsewhere, too. For fishermen hoping for freedom from EU quotas, it's
a great day, a historic day for us.
For those who voted to remain,
it's a shambles. This country's in a total, absolute mess unless we decide to change our minds.
But May has said changing her mind is not an option. The two-year Brexit clock is now ticking.
Vicky Barker reporting from London. 5 million people are at risk of starving to death as a famine spreads through drought-stricken East Africa and Yemen. Correspondent Deborah Pata has more on new relief efforts underway.
Red 917, you're clear to drop.
Hope for the village of Mar is pinned on the skies. The scorched village has not had food for 6 months. Jubilant labourers hired for the day rush to help sort the supplies dropped by the Red Cross.
It's too dangerous to bring food to Mar by road, and so airdrops are the only way to get some kind of nutrition to this community.
Food is the latest weapon in this civil war, where aid convoys are regularly ambushed by warring militias. Despite months of waiting, villagers line up patiently to get their food, including Niaruach Chual. The 110-pound bag of sorghum and beans weighs about the same as she does. The food will help feed her family of 10, now facing a cholera outbreak on top of the food shortages. Her father, Chual Jochiok, is wasting away. "I have a sore stomach," he says. "There is nothing to eat but leaves and fruit. Sometimes I have nothing." But not everyone gets help today. Ujiwami Bailbol is new to the region and not registered with the Red Cross. She fled the fierce fighting 300 miles away. "We were sleeping, and then the war came to us," she said. "I saw the soldiers shoot my children and burn my house to the ground." Heavily pregnant, she fled with her two surviving children, walking for 24 days to find safety. Amazingly, she gave birth to a healthy boy in the bush along the way. But Bol's gamble didn't work. "There is no extra food. I don't know anyone here," she says. "I just sit under a tree and hope people will help me." But everyone here already has too many hungry stomachs to fill. There just isn't room for one more. Deborah Patter, CBS News, Juba, South Sudan.
The EPA is under fire for its decision to scrap a plan to ban a controversial insecticide on farms.
The Obama administration wanted to ban the use of chlorpyrifos and similar pesticides on food after a government review concluded that they could harm children's brains. EPA head Scott Pruitt says sound science and decision-making led him to reverse that move. One environmental group claims that even tiny amounts of it can hurt brain development of fetuses, infants, and children, and it's going to court to fight the decision. Dow Chemical has manufactured and sold chlorpyrifos since 1965. Peter King, CBS News.
A SpaceX milestone Thursday night.
"We have commit and we have liftoff." At
Kennedy Space Center's Pad 39A has launched space history from Apollo.
"Space shuttle spreads its wings."
To the space shuttle.
"Liftoff of the Falcon 9.
Now SpaceX is hoping to achieve another milestone.
And you can see it descending there.
By relaunching a used rocket, the Falcon 9. After successfully landing it back on Earth last year.
That's going to help lower costs.
CBS News space consultant Bill Harwood.
"Just like a science fiction movie, coming down on that tail of fire and landing bullseye right on the target."
A SpaceX rep compared it to launching a pencil over the Empire State Building and having it land on a plate on the other side with the tip pointing up. SpaceX has stuck the landing 8 out of 13 times, but it's still risky. Although this rocket landed back on Earth about a year ago, SpaceX says it can have them ready for relaunch in about 4 months. Gwynne Shotwell is SpaceX president and COO.
As far as doing it as soon as you land, taking it over to the launch pad and reflying it again, we might be a couple of years away from that, but that's certainly the intent as well.
But reusing a rocket is only the first step before the giant leap SpaceX hopes to make, a mission to Mars. Manuel Bajorquez, CBS News at Kennedy Space Center.
Another milestone in technology, this time in the world of music. Correspondent Pam Coulter explains.
Forget CD sales and digital downloads. New figures show that for the first time, streaming produced the most revenue for the music industry. The Recording Industry Association of America says overall revenue shot up more than 11% in 2016 to more than $7 billion, the fastest growth in almost two decades. Subscriptions to services like Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon more than doubled last year. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Up next,
you're likely to see more ads and possibly more personal ads.
How a new rule change could affect everyone with an internet connection on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your jobs to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. CBS News technology analyst Larry Magids joining us from Silicon Valley, talking tech. Good to talk to you, Larry.
Good to talk to you, Steve.
All right, let's start off with the pulse of Silicon Valley on this bill that passed Congress allowing internet providers to sell data of users without their consent. What kind of reaction is that getting from companies like Google or Facebook?
I don't know if Google or Facebook have officially weighed in, but I can tell you that people I've spoken to are mostly concerned about it because it does cut back on privacy. Certainly, if you talk to the Electronic Frontier Foundation or any of the civil rights or privacy groups, you're going to get a lot of opposition to what the Senate and then the House passed, because the FCC rule that went into effect or was about to go into effect, it was passed when the Obama appointees or when the Democrats controlled the FCC, would have made it required that internet service providers like a Comcast, a Verizon, or an AT&T get permission before they could sell or use personal information from their customers, like what websites you're going to and what you're doing with your technology, even your IoT, even if you're using your internet connection to turn your lights on and off. That kind of information could be shared if it weren't for this rule. And this rule is likely to be gutted, presuming the president signs the legislation and he's expected to sign it.
How will you know if your information is being shared?
Well, one hint might be if you start getting ads. Now, you're already probably getting ads based on some of your things. Like if you go to Amazon and you're searching for a product, Amazon might make sure that you see an ad for that when you go off to another site. But that's different than your internet service provider looking over your shoulder. The analogy I like to give is the difference between if you walk into a store and they have security cameras that are following you, that's different than if a drone is flying over your head watching you as you walk around your community. So you're likely to see more ads and possibly more personal ads.
What can you do if you're worried about this?
Well, you could get a virtual private network. You could pay a few dollars a month for a service that will route your communication through another server, make it much more difficult to know where you're coming from. You can certainly look for sites that have an HTTPS in the address bar. That S stands for security, and it means that the data is encrypted. That gives you another level of protection. But at the end of the day, your internet service provider does have access to what you're doing. You can't completely hide your tracks, but you can hide them to a certain extent.
Do you imagine this is going to be a new era for internet providers in terms of allowing them more freedom in how they control or use the data of their own users?
Yeah, and of course, it depends on how the internet service providers respond to this. They don't have to use it. One would hope that market conditions or just decency would limit how they use it or their privacy policies, but it certainly gives them a lot more leeway. And that's the big worry, that they could use that leeway in ways that could violate our privacy. There are certainly those among the Democrats and the FCC and among the privacy community that are worried that the providers might abuse this newfound freedom, or this freedom that they're going to continue to have because this regulation will never really go into effect.
All right, let's talk about Samsung's new version of its flagship phone. This is the Galaxy S8, right?
That's right, and it's the successor to the Galaxy S7, but everybody here knows about the Note 7, which is the phone that kept catching fire and exploding. And so this phone is really under a lot of pressure because it's their new flagship phone after having gone through that debacle. They've got to not only convince people that it's a safe phone, but also a great phone. And they certainly put on a very good press conference today talking about how it's, thinner and got a faster processor and a better camera and wireless charging. And you can use your eyes to authenticate you. Lots and lots of really cool features that seem to make it a very competitive phone against the iPhone and other high premium phones.
How bad was Samsung hurt by the Note 7? And does this offer Samsung a chance to rebuild?
They were hurt financially and their reputation was hurt tremendously. I do think this gives them a chance to rebuild. If it turns out people love the phone, and I'm sure they're hoping that there are no significant problems as far as catching on fire, then I think Samsung has a good opportunity to rebuild its image and be right back where it started. But it's a big gamble, but I think they've come up with a good phone, at least, that should be very competitive.
Do you like it?
From what I've seen, I like it. Now, one thing I don't like about it is it's expensive. It starts at $750. The one that I would buy, the bigger one, is $850. And frankly, for my money, I'd rather spend less money and get a phone that's almost as good. And I think that's the big problem going forward, is whether people are going to buy it. But there are always some who are willing to spend whatever it takes to get the greatest phone they can get.
CBS News technology analyst Larry Magid talking tech from Silicon Valley. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you so much, Steve.
The tech world is also testing the boundaries of price transparency in shopping. Here's correspondent Brooke Silva-Braga.
When 25-year-old Rose Temple shopped for these shoes, the retailer, Everlane, displayed more than a picture and a price.
When you click on the item that you want to buy, it shows you exactly where it was made and how much everything cost.
Everlane's transparent pricing gives customers a breakdown of their expenses, including labor, transportation, and materials. The company says this dress cost them $55, the price for the customer $120, a $65 markup.
They can see how much we paid for every aspect of the shirt.
Michael Praisman founded Everlane in 2012, hoping that being upfront about his costs would draw in customers.
The problem in apparel, in many industries, is you have no concept of what value is. So you could buy a $10 t-shirt or a $100 t-shirt, and you don't really know why.
Pricing transparency is popping up at a couple other companies. Handbag maker Oliver Cabell tells customers how much it costs for everything from the leather to the zipper. And European retailer Honest Buy gives a highly detailed summary of the materials used in their clothing and the costs.
They do everything from start to finish.
Professor Lori Massaro of New York's Fashion Institute of Technology says these upstarts use transparency to convince customers they're getting a better deal than traditional retailers offer, even if that's not always true.
I don't want to use the word gimmick, but their biggest marketing tool is their transparent pricing. They make it very easy for the consumer to understand.
Rose says it's the combination of good quality and good value that keeps her coming back. Brooke Silva-Braga for CBS News, New York.
A new study from Penn State and international researchers suggests eating peanuts may help protect against heart disease.
15 overweight and obese men were fed 3 ounces of peanuts after a high-fat meal.
We showed that the peanut shake blunted the lipid response. Lipids are a triglyceride that increase in the blood after a meal.
Penn State nutrition professor Penny Chris Etherden, who headed the study, says it's more good news for peanuts.
They have healthy fats. They, you know, benefit your cholesterol levels. And we've shown that they could benefit artery health.
Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, take a deep breath and relax.
And notice the sensation of the breath. Maybe it's the first time you've noticed your breath all day.
Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, you know, politics. It's all around us everywhere, in Facebook, on TV, on radio. Sometimes it's hard to escape, but some of us are turning to meditation. To help us with that, we've got Benjamin Shalva in studio. He's a guide from Take 5 Meditation in Washington. Benjamin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's great to be here.
Are you seeing more people turn to meditation as a way to cope with the stress of politics?
Very much so. I am being asked to lead meditation and mindfulness training at Take 5 Meditation, and also just to speak about meditation with people that are asking for the first time, how can I calm down? How can I relax? I can't unplug. I need to be able to find my center again. I'm feeling so destabilized. So I've been reaching out and helping folks with that, helping them connect.
Why do you think this works, and how does it work?
I believe meditation works because, first and foremost, it's not just a practice of mind, but it's a practice of the whole self, mind, heart, and body. When we meditate, we're not just thinking to ourselves, calm down. You know how people say to you, hey, well, just relax, and that never really works. In meditation, we actually find a posture, a physical posture. We do breathing practices. So we really begin with the breath and move outwards. And that, I think, helps people who are sometimes a little too trapped in their head.
But if you're skeptical of it, right, you're unfamiliar with meditation, is there any science that shows how it actually has an effect on your body?
Absolutely. There's been a lot of research that connects meditation with the relaxation response. And there's a lot of evidence to show that people that meditate even a few minutes, even for the very first time, will find that there's a reduction in blood pressure. There's a regulation of emotion. There's a reduction in feelings of anxiety and depression. There's a less insomnia. These effects, by the way, are often instantaneous. Even a few mindful breaths can make a huge difference.
All right. Can we give it a try?
Absolutely. This is a meditation, a guided meditation, to help us if we're feeling in the moment struck by anxiety, overwhelmed, and we feel like we've lost our center. Anyone can do this anytime. So to begin with, I'd like to invite listeners to close their eyes and just start by breathing in and out through the nose. Just breathe in and out and notice the sensation of the breath. Maybe it's the first time you've noticed your breath all day. Just feel how the breath moves in and out past the nostrils, how the chest rises and falls. I'd like you to then extend this awareness of the breath to the whole body. Notice what the body feels. Even if the sensations are intense, notice all the different sensations of the body, even how your clothing feels on your skin. Notice sounds. And now extend that awareness also to the emotions. As you're noticing how your body feels, notice also what emotions are flowing through you right now. Any emotions at all are okay. You don't need to worry if you like the emotion or not, if it's a quote-unquote good or bad emotion. Just notice it. And now extend that awareness also to your thoughts. If there's some kind of commentary going on in your head right now, if your thoughts are leading somewhere right now, notice what your thoughts are doing. Notice the activity. What is your mind saying to you? Just listen. Don't worry about if your mind is busy or relaxed. Don't worry about if your thoughts are dark or light or positive or negative. Just notice them. And now see if you can bring this all together for a moment. As you're sitting here and breathing, in and out through the nose, notice your physical self, your emotional self, and your intellectual self. Notice your body, your heart, and your head. And offer in your mind's eye now just a little prayer of thanks for this wonderful self of yours. Even in all its complexity and mystery, just offer a little thought of gratitude. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes.
All right, I followed along with that. Feel a little better. That's a start.
Good.
How do you do this on a regular basis? Do you schedule this into your daily routine? Do you have to do this twice a day? Do you have to do this every day?
I think it's actually yes and yes. So I think that ideally one is creating a meditation practice that's steady, where maybe you do 5 or 10 minutes after brushing your teeth in the morning. Maybe you do 5 or 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night. You know, you link it with something else regular and routine in your day, and you get that rhythm going. But at the same time, I encourage my students to meditate when they need it also. In other words, if in a moment they're feeling overwhelmed, it's okay to take a 5-minute break in the middle of a busy day and just step back, find their breath, engage that practice, and then return. So I think it's both.
But it also feels like work, too, because for me, I live an ADHD kind of life. I'm thinking about 7 different things, what I have going on next, what I just did. So how do I focus and get my mind in one place instead of thinking about everything else while I'm doing these meditations? Because I'm a newcomer to this, just like most people probably listening right now.
At Take 5 Meditation, we focus on meditation as a practice. There is no expectation that you're supposed to be good at it right away. And in fact, sometimes I think people run away when they think, oh gosh, I have a busy mind, I can't meditate. Having a busy mind is not an impediment to meditation. And it's a practice. So you come in and you practice these techniques and the mind is still ADHD, it's going crazy, it's going wild. That's okay. You just take it one day at a time. And I've been practicing and teaching meditation for over 20 years now. I still have a wild mind. I still sometimes am overwhelmed with anxiety. And at the same time, I've seen how this practice over time can make a big difference. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to, you know, become a monk on a mountaintop. You can do it in the real world, even with 5 or 10 minutes a day, even in the midst of your busy life.
Benjamin Shalva, thanks for guiding us through this introduction to meditation, at least for me, in the Washington Bureau on Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you so much.
From meditation to the benefits of bacteria.
It's a little tangy, it's a little tart.
Coming up on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS Radio News Podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand. Or hear original audio programming like our Week in Review show, The Weekend Roundup. You can also hear the story behind the story on Reporter's Notebook or What's Hot on Tech Talk with Larry Magid. Get these podcasts and more from iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. More folks are turning to a fermented tea for health benefits.
We have a double head labeler.
GT Dave has been making kombucha at his L.A. factory for more than 20 years. His inspiration comes from his parents' recipe.
It was something kind of unique and bizarre that my parents were making and drinking.
Kombucha is a bittersweet tea fermented with a culture of bacteria and yeast. The pieces floating in the bottle are living organisms, similar to the live probiotic cultures found in yogurt.
The fizzy beverage boasts a range of health benefits, including better digestion and a stronger immune system.
Consumers have fueled a market projected to reach $1.8 billion globally by 2020, up from $600 million in 2015.
And then we pour the starter liquid on top.
It's so popular, really Hannah Crum teaches people how to make kombucha
right
at home.
All you need to be able to do is boil water and make tea.
Kombucha typically brews for 1 to 2 weeks and can be an acquired taste.
It's a little tangy, it's a little tart.
Kombucha's health benefits are not proven medically, but Dave is a believer.
People are tired of being sick and tired. They want to make some changes, and they're seeking out foods that make them feel good naturally.
Dave's brand is now a top seller internationally with 30 flavors. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
For the first time, a woman is overseeing a key part of the Vatican. Here's correspondent Seth Doan.
The Vatican museums are so packed with treasures, it can be hard to know where to look. There's one Pope's gallery of maps, Raphael's Transfiguration, the roughly 2,000-year-old Laocoonte, the first object in museum when it was conceived in the early 1500s, or this, Augusto di Prima Porta.
We study this sculpture in all our schools, and really is the icon of Roman time.
She has a degree in art history and studied this famed statue of Emperor Augustus. Now, as director, Barbara Yatta is in charge of it.
Some of the greatest artwork in the world is in your care.
Yes, I feel the weight of that.
The weight of that responsibility.
Exactly.
In its collection, the Vatican holds a mind-boggling 200,000 pieces of art. Only about 10% are on display. But finding a stunning place to sit and chat is no problem.
What a room in which to do an interview.
It's a special place.
Yatta, a 20-year veteran of the Vatican, says she was surprised when Pope Francis announced in December that she'd become the museum's director. This mother of three was also surprised by all of the attention paid to her gender.
I make a joke of that because everybody keep asking me, how do you feel? How do you feel to be the woman? I feel as a person, really.
The Vatican is a famously male-dominated institution.
You know, I worked in the Vatican Library for 20 years, and after 8 years, I became head of a department. I never felt discriminated to be a woman in the Vatican Library.
She shrugs off any special attention. She's got work to do.
Yes. In the last 2 months of 2017, we had 70,000 people more than last year.
The museum attracts more than 6 million visitors a year.
We're going against the flow here.
Exactly.
But it's a balance, trying to attract more visitors while not diluting the experience. On the day we visited, she estimated crowd size.
19,000 people, 20,000 people today. Is that typical? Is that a lot?
It's a lot for this time of the year.
Yatta plans to hire more guards so they can be open for longer hours. While the Sistine Chapel part of the museum is often full, we found plenty of space around other masterpieces, including the Nile. Yatta is working to get guides to encourage visitors to stop at lesser-known spots. There's also the issue of keeping so much art on display and in good shape. It takes a team of more than 150 people to work on constant maintenance and restoration.
If you do make annual and daily preservation and conservation, you really do not need much restoration.
What struck us is there's so much. It fills not just public spaces, but private passageways.
Even just in a small side room by an elevator, there's spectacular art.
Exactly. Look at Della Robbia.
Yes, near this back elevator, a Della Robbia, the Florentine famous for his work with glazed terracotta. And in the director's office, there's her desk.
Your desk is unbelievable.
It's a very nice Pius IX desk. For sure, he has his coat of arms, so it was part of his collection, yes.
A picture of her boss sits over her shoulder. It's a reminder that this is part of a greater mission. She believes art can act as a spiritual ambassador.
Of course, I'm Catholic, and I do believe that arts takes you to faith.
Next up, the Vatican Museums will have some of its collection on display in China. Yata says that is an effort to build spiritual bridges in a place where there are significant restrictions on traditional missionary work.
Correspondent Seth Doan reporting from Rome. Back home, the Library of Congress is welcoming some new recordings deemed treasures worthy of preservation.
The recordings range from this hard-to-hear 1888 cylinder experimental recording to more modern fare, NWA, from its album Straight Outta Compton.
Hey, Dre, what's going on, man? What's going on? Hey, what y'all gonna do for this last record?
There is Barbara Streisand.
People who need people.
And Judy Garland.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Big Mama Thornton doing Hound Dog. Wilson Pickett. The Eagles.
Desperado.
And Don McLean performing his classic.
Bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
There is more than just music.
This is emergency. Can I talk to God?
Comedian Richard Pryor performing one of his famous skits. And baseball announcer Vin Scully.
Playing for the last time of the Polar Bound, you want them to take their time.
Announcing the last Dodger-Giant game in 1957 before both teams moved to California, these will now all be part of the National Recording Registry. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Some digital classics are also getting recognized.
Are you a gamer? Maybe you started out years ago with some vintage video games. How about this one? Donkey Kong from 1981, or Mortal Kombat. Those are two of this year's finalists for induction into the World Video Game Hall of Fame. A dozen games will make it, and we'll know the winners on May 4th. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. We appreciate you listening to this week's show. Please keep in mind you can do a search online anytime to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.